Hey, VBackLink family, it's Lily, and I was wondering if I could ask you a really quick favor. If the VBackLink has ever helped you, encouraged you, or taught you something along your birth after cesarean journey, I would be so grateful if you would vote for us for Best Podcast in NoCo Style's Best of NoCo Awards. As a Northern Colorado born and raised mama myself, this is especially meaningful for me. It takes less than a minute to vote, and we've linked it right in the show notes. Every vote helps more families discover the VBackLink, bringing more awareness to VBack education and support. Thank you so much for cheering on our little team. We appreciate you more than you know. So go to the show notes, click the link to vote, and then come back to this episode for another incredible episode.
Hello, hello. Happy Wednesday, Women of Strength. You are listening to the VBackLink podcast. I'm your host today, Paige, and I am joined by my lovely, beautiful co-host, Lily. Hey, Lil.
Hey, girl. Hi. I just have to say that I now feel really self-conscious about the faces that I make when listening to guests, because we've been making reels and we like are on YouTube, and I feel like I need to have my face, like I have to be constantly smiling because I feel like I have RBF in like so many of our reels because I'm just like attentively listening and not paying attention to how I look, and I now feel self-conscious. So I'm just gonna like, should I just do jazz hands always so that any clip we pull is just like, hello, happy to be here.
I think you always look great. Don't worry. I had that too, where we were at a virtual doula Zoom meeting, and I had two of my friends message me, and they're like, are you doing okay? You didn't look like your usual happy self. And I was like, uh-oh, my RBF was turned up strong today, I guess. So sometimes, you know.
And it's funny because I'm not sure that we're those people. Like, I would not say that anyone's ever told me that I have RBF, but man. Feels like I do on those reels. So I don't know.
I don't think so. If it helps. I don't think so. Anyway, today it's just going to be us, and we are going to talk about long pregnancies and long labors. This is kind of a hot topic recently. Lily has seen it pop up in our group, and personally, as doulas, Lily and I have both seen it come up with some clients lately. Even in Lily's own VBAC story, I also have had a long pregnancy. When I was going for my first VBAC, I went to 41 weeks and 5 days. So this was my second baby. My first baby was 35 weeks. So that can be a big mental game when you don't know what to expect. And then with my third, I was like, am I going to go past my due date? Because my first was 35 weeks. My second was 41 weeks and 5 days. What's happening? So we're going to dive into that, talking about logistically some ways to set yourself up for success with expectations and practicality, things to plan to help make that easier. And then with long labors, ways that you can combat fatigue. Lily has some really good advice. I've SOS'd her a few times where I'm like, what do you do?
I think my specialty is long labors at this point, personally and professionally. I think I'm just the long labor lady. So this is your PSA. Like, if you hire me, maybe I'm cursed. I don't know. Every time I'm out of long labor, though, you can catch me texting my doula and being like, thank you so much. I love you. I love you. I love you. I'm so sorry. I love you. Thank you for all of that you did for me. She carried me. So, all right. Well, before we do that, Paige, you have a review to read. Can I just say, Women of Strength, that Paige and I are giddy that you're leaving us reviews. It is big shoes to fill. If you have not been listening to the podcast long, you may not know, but Paige and I are not the original hosts of the podcast. And Megan so graciously gave us the opportunity to take over the podcast at the beginning of 2026. And man, it just is, it's big shoes to fill. And Meg, if you're listening, we love you. And it's really fun to see that the work that we're doing is like being carried forward and making an impact. So leave us a review. We love to hear from you. And just know that we're like beaming from ear to ear every time they come in. So
if you've listened to the last few, I've been begging for more. So thank you. We're having fun. This one was left just a couple weeks ago. It was left by Alpine Thriller. And the title was, do yourself a favor and listen to this podcast. This is from Apple Podcasts. I love this podcast and found it so very helpful, informative, and encouraging while planning my VBAC. I will admit, I found it somewhat annoying to keep hearing over and over that you have a better chance of having a VBAC if you hire a doula. After my first birth, where I had so many people in the room while I labored, I really wanted it to be just my husband and I, other than the doctors and nurses coming and going as needed. But I really wanted a VBAC, so I found a doula that I felt drawn to, and in all caps, I am so glad that I did. I don't think I would have hired a doula if it had not been for the VBAC link, reiterating how helpful doulas can be. She was amazing and also had taken the VBAC link's doula course and certification, and I really attribute so much of getting my VBAC and it going fairly quickly to her. So thank you, VBAC link.
Yay! I know. And I see it in our group all the time too, of like, can I have a VBAC without a doula? The answer is yes. That's the reality. The answer is yes. You can have a VBAC without a doula. On the flip side of that, statistically, doulas improve the odds of VBAC success. And if it's within your means to hire a doula that you jive with, like that gives us, I don't know, it gives us more support. It gives us more advocacy. And really, at the end of the day, a doula also protects your privacy. I say that a lot. Like, part of my job as your doula is to guard your space and advocate if you don't want students in your space or if you don't want the like brand new nurse that is shadowing. And so then you get two nurses, you know, like I can be the advocate for that privacy. So anyway, yay. So fun. I love it. And if you're looking for a VBAC certified doula near you, Women of Strength, we have a doula finder on our website. It is linked in our bio on Instagram. It's on our website. If you go to thevbaclink.com and type in like find in the search, it'll come up. Also, if you DM us the word find, F-I-N-D, it'll send it to you. So yay.
Yay. And I say this over and over again, but it's not just hiring a doula to hire a doula. It's hiring a doula who is the right fit for you, who matches what you need. If you need more hands-on support, find a doula who has strengths in that with like position work. If you need if you want a doula who has calm energy, find a doula who has calm energy, because we are who we are. Like, you can't fake somebody as a doula, and I'm not going to be the right fit for the same person that Lily is. So you're investing a lot in your doula. Take the time. I know it's more work on the front end, but take that time to really get to know the doulas in your area to find how they can best serve you, and really take the time to know what you need from a doula, what you want from a doula. And you can't doula yourself. You can't doula yourself.
You can't, even if you knew everything. Like, you can't. Labor is just a thing. And I will say it right now, Paige better live in Colorado when I have another baby, because my plan is to hire Paige as my doula. And I say that because my doula is becoming a midwife. So let me just be clear that I love my doula, but I'm not sure that she will have capacity to be at my birth in the presence as a doula. I hope that she will be there in some capacity, but I don't imagine that she will like want to just be my doula as a midwife at that point. So that's just my personal plan. Yeah, I love that you said to interview. Wow. And we have interview questions too. We have a blog about all the questions you can ask a doula and how to approach a doula interview, just like you would interview a provider, but definitely interview doulas. Don't just, you know, go for it, but also do go for it. You know, I don't know. I love you too. Guys, okay, you need to know that I get to squeeze this one in like 2 weeks for real life. And I have no idea in what order these things will air, but in the real time of this, I get to squeeze that one in 2 weeks. She will be in Colorado. We're having a VBAC link retreat. So all of the VBAC girlies, past and present, in one place with an episode dropping with all of us. It's going to be good. Mm-hmm. A good time.
It's going to be so good. And like Lily was saying earlier with the reviews, how we just value this so deeply. Lily and I literally like eat, sleep, breathe VBAC link stuff. Like, it is never not on our minds. We are so hyped and so excited for what we get to do here and what we envision for it in the future. So thank you for being on this journey with us. Like, thank you for embracing us. Thank you for all of the feedback that you've gotten. Every time we hear you guys are great hosts, it fuels us. Our fire is burning so big, and we're just here to keep keep bringing it to you, keep talking with you. And anyway, we're going to take a break for our intro. Then we will be back to talk all about long pregnancies, long labors.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the Feedback Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC Link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
We are back and let's dive in. Okay, Lily, due dates. What do you tell your clients or just feedback moms in general about how to plan for due dates?
Yeah, it's hard because I think there's layers. There's layers of, as VBAC mamas, many of us have never been in labor before. Some of us had a labor that ended in a cesarean. Some of us, that was an induction. So that was not a spontaneous labor and it ended in a cesarean. Some of us had spontaneous labor. That was my experience at almost 42 weeks with my first baby. And others of us had planned cesareans for whatever reason and have never been in labor. And so I think there's a really hard thing with VBAC specifically, and this will kind of tie, I think, into our long labor conversation of, we're not first-time moms, but our bodies sort of are. And so I tell my clients, I tell everybody, let me be honest with you, because even parents that have had their baby and they know when that baby was born, that does not necessarily predict your future babies. So I just tell all my clients, just mentally prepare to go to 42 weeks. Prepare for it. If you're telling yourself what your due date is, it's 42 weeks. It's your due date. And then anything before that is a bonus, not a letdown, you know?
Two things that I've noticed recently are, number one, don't tell people your actual due date. Or
yes.
Tell people
yes.
later. Because it gets so in your head. I see it over and over when people are like, any baby? Baby time? Baby time? Baby time? And it's just, it's too much. It's too much.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to make an assumption that my in-laws don't listen to this podcast. But like specifically, we did not share with my in-laws because my father-in-law has a very firm belief that a due date is an expiration date and that your baby comes on your due date and brr, brr, brr. And my sister-in-law was actually pregnant with their first when I was pregnant with my VBAC baby. And I remember the family group chat where my father-in-law was like, okay, it's your due date. Like, where's the baby? And my brother-in-law commends to Jason, actually texted back and was like, most babies aren't born on their due date. Like, leave us alone. And I think that that just protects your peace, right? Like, it is something small. You could say, you know, what we did is we were just like, November, probably November. Cause I was due like mid November. So it felt safe to say November, you know, probably November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, birth month can be helpful. If you want to give a date or a week, you can give your 42nd week, something like that. Just so it helps save you from some of that pressure.
Yeah.
From friends and family. We don't want that pressure from our medical team, and we certainly don't want it from other people who are well-meaning, who just want to squeeze your baby and love on you, but it gets in your head. The other thing, number two, is it goes along those same, well, two more things. It goes along that same line of not telling people your actual due date. But when you're planning logistically, like if you're planning childcare, and this is a new thing to navigate for VBAC moms, if you have a baby at home, your childcare, have a plan A, plan B, plan C. It it will tear at your heartstrings to leave that first baby and your family is changing. That's a big life shift. And it's okay for that to feel hard. And it's okay to be really protective about who you want to care for that one or two or three babies that you have at home. But if you fly out family members, this happened to me with my second. My sister came to visit and I thought for sure that it would be within the time that I went into labor, and it wasn't. And it was so hard to say goodbye to her. And it ended up being fine. And we relied on family and friends, or like not family, but friends. But if you can, try to have a plan A, plan B, plan C that you feel really, really good about, so that you don't feel disappointed or like you've done something wrong
if you have family. Right?
Yeah.
I see that in our group a lot. If the like, well, my mother is my mother. I don't know why my mom. Mother feels very formal. But my mom is flying out and she's going to be here when I'm 38 weeks, but she only has 2 weeks of PTO. So do you guys think I'll go into labor before then? And the reality is we don't know. We don't know. Maybe. I would say most people, unless you're being induced for a medical reason, probably aren't having their baby spontaneously at 38 weeks. That's not hard and fast. Certainly some people have their babies that early spontaneously. I'm not throwing out actual real statistics here. I'm just saying that most people are probably not having their babies at 38 weeks. We're probably leaning closer. The research does show us that like most people have their babies by 41 and something. I'm not looking at the research. I should pull it up, which I will while Paige talks to you so that I have actual stats for you. But the reality is we don't know. We have no idea. And I also recognize how hard that is. Even with my second baby, knowing this, I went to almost 42 weeks. My midwives had well prepared me to do that with my first baby. And then with my daughter, I literally remember sitting down with my midwife and saying, hey, I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And she was like, yeah, what's up? And I was like, is there any way to predict when I might have this baby? She was like, no, girl. I was like, okay, cool. Okay, cool. My babies were born exactly like a week. My VBAC baby was a week earlier than my first baby, but I had two spontaneous labors. Who knows?
Yeah. And it's not to
say that. Tell us about your babies, Paige, because you had 35 weeks, 41 and six?
Five.
41 weeks. And then what was your third? Your fourth was spontaneous too.
Okay. Okay. My third was 40 and three. And then my fourth, I started laboring and my water broke 39 and something. I don't remember exactly, but it was different. It was very different. And it's very normal also if to go later with a third, like just because you've had one at 39 and something and another one at 40 doesn't mean that you're going to stay within that window for your third. So that can be also something to remember. But yes, also we're not saying that induction is bad. It's just we know that for a VBAC to help reduce your risk of rupture, and also there are other pros for avoiding induction, like shorter labor. Inductions are not bad, but we're going to get into this with longer labors. It just brings other things like fatigue that you have to worry about. So if you can stay at home, and if you can labor at home and have a place where you feel comfortable and be able to go outside on a walk or be able to distract yourself by being with your kids, and you're not away from your kids at an induction where that can weigh on your heart and your mind, to delay that as long as possible, I feel like there are a lot of pros to that. And it does make the overall experience, I see it. It makes it better.
I also think there's the factor of some people are told, well, VBAC success drops after 40 weeks, which is true. That's true. I'm not going to lie to you. That's true. And there's not a significant amount. I do think there are some studies. So hear me when I say that there are some studies that did differentiate between then spontaneous labor at 40 weeks versus induced after 40 weeks. But much of the research is a combination of those things. So when we say VBAC success drops after 40 weeks, there are other factors like induction and things like that that may contribute to that research study's conclusion on success, because what else drops the success rate of a VBAC? And the reality is induction does. We know that induced VBACs are statistically less successful. That does not mean that they're impossible at all. If you need a medically necessary induction, that does not mean that it is impossible to have a VBAC. And it could mean that your labor is longer. It could mean, you know, with Pitocin, sometimes contractions are more intense. There's things like that. So I have some of the data on due dates pulled up here. I think something that's interesting to note is all of our cycles are different in length. And so for both of my babies, I have kind of religiously tracked my ovulation. And so I knew when I got a peak ovulation strip, and therefore my due date was adjusted accordingly. I've had two separate midwives who have very graciously said, awesome, that sounds great to me. Let's go based off of when you ovulated, not your last missed period, because I have 32-day cycles. So that gave me, with your last missed period calculation is assuming a 28-day cycle. So 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, that gave me 4 more days. And when we're talking about being down to the wire or feeling pressured, that 4 days is a lot of days. I would have had to have risked out of midwifery care with my first baby if I hadn't been given those 4 days. And both of those things, by the way, were confirmed by an early first trimester ultrasound, which I do have because I have a history of ectopic pregnancy. So I always get an early scan just to confirm that baby has implanted correctly in my uterus. Not everybody gets an early scan. I understand that. But as far as dating ultrasounds go, the most accurate is in your first trimester. So after that, if we're adjusting due dates based off a second or third trimester ultrasound, it is not accurate. It is only accurate in an early dating scan. After that, it goes wonky. So research-wise, we've got a 2001 study, which is old. Like, let's be honest about the quality of that data. We need more than 2001. That was a long time ago. But 50% of women giving birth for the first time gave birth by 40 weeks and 5 days, while 75% of women gave birth by 41 weeks and 2 days. And that was for women laboring for the first time. Meanwhile, 50% of all women who had given birth at least once before gave birth by 40 weeks and 3 days, and 75% by 41 weeks. And then if we look at a 2013 study, 50% gave birth by 40 weeks and 5 days. So that's only 50%. And I mean, the other 10 and 25. So we've got 10% at 38 weeks, 25% at 39 weeks, 50 at 40, 75 at 41 and 2, and 90% by 44 weeks. 44 weeks is wild. Wow. That's a lot of time. I would say generally the 42-week mark is where the research gets more gray about going past 42 weeks. It certainly doesn't mean that you couldn't. You always have a right to advocate for that. But we have stronger research on 42 weeks and earlier. But
yep. And in our course, we dive deeper into what to do about due dates and what to expect as far as monitoring and tests you will face from providers, or the options of what you have around that, even what things, signs of a bait and switch when a doctor starts pushing for certain things that you may or may not feel comfortable with around that time period. So
taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
Okay, should we move on to labor?
Sure. Yeah. I was just at my longest labor ever. She has an open invitation to come on the podcast, by the way. Can I just tell you all? Because her birth was, I said to a midwife who was there, I said, I think this birth in many ways took me apart as a doula and also put me back together as a doula. And I like will hold her birth so dear to my heart. Her story really is her story, and I hope she comes on to tell it. So I'm not going to share the details of her birth. However, it was a very long labor, and I have experienced a very long labor personally. And I feel like I've been with a handful of clients that have had long labors, and I've had this conversation with my own midwife about VBAC, and she really has a stance that sometimes, not always, and this is, again, this is anecdotal, not hard and fast data. But sometimes VBACs can be longer because, gosh, isn't there something kind of cool about if your body recognizes that there's a scar that you have to be gentle with? Like, I think that's kind of neat to consider. So sometimes birth is long and sometimes it's not. And we can't predict that either. And my whole pregnancy with my VBAC baby, I was like, and my midwife too, because again, I had spontaneous labor. I labored for 44 hours with my first baby before my cesarean because he flipped breech. I was like, surely it's going to be shorter for my VBAC. I've labored before. I've dilated before. I did all of that. I did it. Like, surely. And when we hit hour 44 of my VBAC and we weren't even at the hospital yet, I said, shoot. So at this point, I think I will prepare myself personally for a very long labor, and anything beyond that is a bonus, just like I said about due dates. And so that is my sage advice for all of you. I'm not telling you that you need to prepare for a day's long labor necessarily. Is that super common? No. But I would prepare for your labor to probably not be 5 hours, you know? What would you say, Paige?
I think that's really wise, because if you go back to Ashley's episode, that's when she had her panic episode, was when during labor, it was going longer, but a very, very normal timeline, but longer than what she had thought in her mind it would be, what she was hoping for. And it's okay to hope for things, but plan for longer and be okay with longer.
Yeah.
Because
I've had that happen to a client too. It's hard.
Yeah.
I had a client who had had a vaginal birth before, and because that labor was fairly short, like under 12 hours, I think, expected that her VBAC would be that way. And her VBAC was, I can't remember, less than 15 hours. Like, so still actually really not classified as a super long labor. But it was something that she really struggled with postpartum too, because she felt like the narrative she had told herself was that, well, my birth, because I've had a shorter birth before, surely it won't be long. So
yeah,
it's such a tough mental game, and you can't predict the mental game, but I think you can prepare for it and coping skills to get you there. So let's talk about if labor is long. What do we do? How do we figure that out? Because we can't force it, right? So let's pretend we just take induction off the table. Let's take induction or augmentation off the table for right now. Those are options, by the way, women of strength. You can, if you're having, like, let's say prodromal labor, which is labor that feels like labor, but it doesn't cause cervical change, you could opt for an induction, or you could augment your labor, which I actually did in my own VBAC because I got to 7 centimeters and was stuck there and was defeated. And I had been in labor for 64 hours. And I said, F this, I would like some Pitocin, please. And then I had a baby 2 hours later. I also want to caution you, women of strength, not to take somebody else's experience with induction, augmentation, long labor, short labor, and try to transpose it over your experience. Some people are on Pitocin for 2 hours and then they push a baby out. Some people are on Pitocin for 12 hours and they push a baby out. Some people are on Pitocin for 24 hours and it doesn't work. So I think that we can't try to shove our own story over somebody else's. So I would caution us against that. But let's just say we're not augmenting, we're not inducing. How do we cope with labor when it's long?
I think your doula can help a lot with this. Speaking of doulas,
sure.
I like to balance rest with movement. We don't want to be totally stagnant. We don't want to totally be stationary and just waiting for things to happen. Because if there is a reason why, Lily talks about being a birth detective, and doulas do this constantly throughout births, where we're like, okay, what, midwives as well. What are we doing? Where is baby? How is baby trying to navigate? Is there emotion? Like they talk about an emotional dystocia of labor, where what's a hang up? Do we need a fear release? Do we need an emotional release? Do we need a change of scenery? Because with a long labor, it's very, very normal. And with shorter labors, any labor, it's very normal to hit emotional walls and physical walls. Mm-hmm. And know that it can feel very, you can feel very desperate. And it can feel very hopeless in those moments when you hit a wall. And you can feel very vulnerable and you're stripped down and you're tired and you're in pain. And it is hard, and you'll feel like you have nothing left, but you do. But the wall, it's just a big wave, and it will also pass.
Yeah. I would also encourage us to not think of rest as unproductive. I think that it can feel that way. Like, what do you mean you're telling me to take a nap? I think that sometimes we get angry at our need to rest, but especially in long labors, you can't keep going if you're exhausted. And sometimes you might find that you're so exhausted that your body will start to turn off contractions when you lay down to rest. And taking advantage of that break is not counterproductive. The rested you needs that. Your body needs that refuel, you know? And so if your contractions, when you lay down, go away for a little while, take advantage, I think. Take advantage. Take a nap, rest, and know that in an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours plus, when you wake up, it's entirely possible that your body is then ready to make some different moves as far as your contractions go. But if you're exhausted, your body is wise. And sometimes we need to rest, and it's not counterproductive to rest. And I say that as like,
no.
I have lived this, and like, I get it. I get how hard that is. And I also get how defeating it is. It can feel almost dismissive for someone to tell you when you're feeling intense contractions, like, I think you should try to take a nap. Pfft, are you kidding me? What?
I know. I wish.
And here I am telling you that.
I'm like, wouldn't it be
you
so
wish that
nice
we had what?
If an off switch to just be able to be like,
yes.
Because when you're in the throes of labor, like, how do you quiet your mind? How do you do that? So that's where some of the mental prep can come now when you're pregnant and with the meditation. Learn how to quiet and still your mind so that even if your body doesn't fall asleep, your mind isn't contributing to like the stress and the tension, and just like go blank. You don't have to figure it all out in that moment when you're resting. Just use that time to let your mind be blank. And that will be a good reset for your nervous system.
Sure. Yeah. So rest as a baseline. After that, and this is, I hesitate to say all of these things because I think it's hard. I still think having a doula is helpful because a doula, a good doula, and I think this is a great question to ask, like, tell me about how you analyze labor and how you, like, help my labor progress. Because I tell my clients, my job as your doula is to help you be comfortable and cope with contractions. And the other half of my job is to help your labor progress. And sometimes that's not comfortable. And so you also want someone that's okay with suggesting something that's not going to feel the best, but it might actually progress your labor. Because the secret to labor is that it's not about trying to find the position that you're the most comfortable in. It's about embracing that things are going to get more intense and that that's a good thing. And that's a really hard, I think, like, mental switch to flip. So after you're rested, you've done comfort, and then now we're kicking it up. I think having a doula there to help figure out, okay, like, where is baby in your pelvis? Like Paige was saying, is baby still really high, or are they like mid pelvis? Like, those are two different things that we can kind of work with. And awesome if you have a nurse that has like spinning babies training or that availability to give you that one-on-one attention. I would caution you not to rely on your nurse to be also your doula, because your nurse is your nurse. And I don't think it is fair to our nurses to expect them to play the role of a doula either. Sometimes they have just you and it's one-on-one attention and it's so awesome and they have capacity for that. And other times they don't, and you don't know what you're going to get. So having a doula really protects that ability to have someone there to do all this stuff with you. And there's not a prescription for labor, right? Like, there's not a, oh, you have had a long labor, or you're in a long labor, and so you should do these five moves, and then that's going to really get us going. I think it really depends on, like you were saying, sometimes it's emotional, sometimes it's physical, sometimes it's tightness in our body. I've seen that in clients where, like, they'll be on one side, and I can, like, see their hips shifting weird, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, there it is. I found it. And then we like rub out some muscle stuff. Sometimes baby is like looking to the side and we have to figure out how to encourage them to flip a little bit. So doula work is just a big puzzle, is what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also having the marathon mindset as far as fueling yourself. I like to tell my clients to have a large profile of flavors, because some of my clients like salty things, some of them want some sweet things, but get things that will sustain your energy. Things that I love. I love the bone broth packets, like that you can sip.
Because
it
the hospital has like chicken broth at here and it sucks. But the bone broth packets have protein.
Yes. Yes. So sometimes the smell can be a little off-putting, but you can sip it and it has protein. Mm-hmm. Look for ways to get protein. So I like the bone broth. I like the honey sticks. I have some really good ones that have a large profile of flavors. If honey isn't really your thing, I'm not a huge honey stick girl, but I love these ones that I use. They're so yummy. What else, Lily? What do you like? I have microwavable rice and mashed potatoes.
Oh, I love that idea. I'm totally stealing that from you. I think that's really, really smart. But you can also take advantage, I think, of your hospital too. Most hospitals have like some sort of either like on the floor itself, like a little kitchenette. So I make my clients a lot of times like peanut butter toast or like peanut butter and honey toast. Or you can order like a fruit plate to your room. I have honey stinger waffles. Those are great. Like, if you're a runner, what would you pack to like quick bite is what I want you to think about. Like, what could you eat while you were running a marathon? Because that's this. You're likely not in labor sitting down to like eat a meal. You're maybe having a contraction and taking a bite of something. So small bites, I think, is helpful. Also not super strong flavors, because most women at some point throw up in labor. So there's that too. I'm trying to think of what else.
I love electrolytes.
Yes. I love the Mama Chia packets. Have you seen those?
Yes. Yeah.
I love those.
Not a lot of my clients.
A little bit of substance, you know?
Yeah.
because like honey is like a great quick blood sugar boost, but it's not actually like putting anything into your body. So if you're actually hungry, you probably should try to get something in your body.
Oh, there are some, okay. I don't know if you like this kind of flavor profile, but there's these, there, I think it's Mandra's lentils, or there's a chickpea.
Oh.
They come in these packets. They're like instant microwavable, kind of like microwavable rice. And they come in these packets and I bring them and I like them because lentils are a great source of protein, chickpeas also. Yeah. And they just microwave quick, soft. Yeah, I like those too.
The thing about bone broth that we mentioned earlier that I want to bring up again is that that is one that if your hospital, which I don't love, has a policy that you can't eat anything after you have an epidural, if it's not a clear liquid, which frankly is an outdated policy, but whatever, bone broth is a clear liquid. So you can sip on bone broth in compliance with that policy. Also, a hospital policy is not a law. I'll have clients be like, so my nurse said that I can't eat anything. What do you think? And my job is not to give medical advice, right? I'm just their doula. And I say, well, I think that I have no idea what you do when I leave this room. So weird. I don't know. So I think you have the autonomy to make your own choices. And I had a lot of radical responsibility of those choices. But
it's true. In March, I had a long labor and we were going on day two. And that becomes really difficult the morning of a subsequent day because it's hard to think about, oh my gosh, we have to do this day again. We just did a day, things feel the same. How is it going to be different? And just know that because one day went one way doesn't mean the second day is going to go that way. But
it
then
feels the same, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. Lily have really great tips. Open the window, get some fresh air, take a shower. Like I had my client do that. And we like braided her hair. I put on some fresh, vibrant citrusy oils to like get the stink out of the room. Like it can get really, what's the word? Like thick. The air can get thick.
Yeah, totally. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. So just like kind of have like turn on some fans. A new day, get some music.
Brush your teeth. Different.
Brush your teeth. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Honestly, when we're waking up on a second day of labor, I always say, like, okay, we've been dark and relaxy all night. It's time to like up the music, turn on some sunshine, reset our circadian rhythm. It's from Summer Fridays. It's the like their face mist. I keep it in my doula bag. I put it in there for me, thinking that I would really like to have that as a doula. And every single one of my birth clients has used it at some point in their labor because it is just a quick, even if you have an epidural and you don't want to get all the way up and try to figure out how to wash your face in like a basin in your bed, like a spray of your face can be so simple. And I love that you said like braid your hair, brush your hair, get it reset. Something that I do at our hospital has a walking path around it. And I have found that many of the providers are really supportive. If you're not hooked up to a medication, to go walk outside. Go walk outside. Or find the window on the floor that's even bigger than the window that's in your room.
Yeah.
On the flip side of this conversation, I had a friend before I ever had babies who had two really long labors, and her second labor was longer than her first. So maybe I should have really listened to Stephanie's sage advice. Steph Spalding, I love you. Thank you for this advice. She had her babies at birth centers, and her advice for me was to pick the room that didn't have a window. She was like, because it's really hard to watch the sun rise and then watch the sun fall. And it can be beneficial to just not know what time it is. And my birth room with my VBAC did not have a window. And so we had to go seek sunlight when we needed a reset. But I think you could like weigh the pros and cons of that. Or like, do you want just to not know what time it is? And maybe you do a different type of reset. Maybe you still reset the smell, but you keep it dim, you know, if you're really labory. But if we're stalled out, I think that that like full reset is really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, anything else?
I think I could talk about this forever. It's something that, like I said, I think it's my specialty at this point. And so, Women of Strength, just know that we're here for you. And if you're listening to this episode and you have more questions or you want to pick our brains, that's twofold. One, we do offer one-on-one consultations. They're with me currently. So if you want that and to like pick somebody's brain for 45 minutes and talk about coping skills or planning, that's an option for you. You can email us at info@thevbacklink.com if that's something that you're interested in. Or if you just have a quick question, you can email us at info@thevbacklink.com or message us on Facebook or Instagram. We're pretty responsive. So we're here for you too. But if you want like a little more of a deep dive and a personal conversation, that's an option.
Yeah. So let us know if any of these tips help you, if you have more tips you want to share, and we hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.